Hello, you're very welcome along to LOI Weekly. It's season 3, episode 27. It's Dan here in the chair this week. We're in association with Air Sport and Independent.ie. You can find us at Podcast Republic, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and at LOI Weekly on Twitter. And I've got Johnny here with me. Johnny McDonald, though.
That's it.
So where's Johnny Ward? Johnny, come in. You're on holidays again. Where are you? Where are you this time, son?
How are you, lads? Calling in from Inchidani Beach in southwest Cork, just looking at about 25 people about to go out surfing on the beach here, very idyllic part of the world, and looking forward to seeing a bit more of the coast the next couple of days, and then back to Dublin for a bit of work at the weekend, Dan.
You're just discovering Ireland, John.
Yeah, discovering Ireland and discovering myself and all that, but it's an underappreciated country that we have, in fairness. When you travel around it, we've some amazing spots.
Yeah, keeping the well-earned money inside the country, Johnny. Yeah, keeping the economy going.
Reinvesting, John. You know, we have to, with Brexit and all that, we have to look within and discover what we have here. But the country is, just judging by the last few days, there's no shortage of cash in this country. I mean, an awful lot of people on holidays.
Did you bring the helicopter or did you take the train?
No, I got a lend of my mate's 1985 G camper van, and it's been first time I've ever gone camping. Yeah, great fun. So you just park up beside a hotel and then kind of
plug in.
Let on that you're in the hotel. Yeah, exactly.
Go in and ask for Wi-Fi. What's the Wi-Fi?
Yeah. How many times got lost, Johnny, since you?
You should try this. This camper van is a piece of work now. It's if it gets to 60 miles an hour on the motorway, you're doing very well. But
for some reason, I'm imagining Otto from The Simpsons driving it. But but is it just the two of you, John? Is it just a romantic getaway, or is there a sort of a bohemian group of you traveling around the country together?
No, it's just the two of us. We're kind of stopping off to meet friends along the way, and actually the mate I stayed with on Monday texted me to say he was having coffee opposite John Caulfield a few hours later down in Cork. So,
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
bad thing for Johnny.
Apparently, JC was very busy on the phone anyway. He looks like he could be doing a bit of wheel and dealing. So, it'll be interesting to see where he's back in the game soon.
So, there's no sat nav on your is it a Volkswagen, Johnny, or something like that? There's no sat nav on it.
It's a Ford. Yeah, it's doing a lot of things like that. As I'm not actually driving, so I'm just a little bit worried that.
So you're navigating. So you're in serious trouble, Johnny.
I'm navigating.
Okay. Well, Johnny, before you went away, did you get in some cup action over the weekend? I saw you were extolling the virtues of bows and shells, and then the virtues of being able to have a pint at Collinstown and Galway as well.
Yeah, it was at the game Friday, obviously, and. Subsequent to the game, there's been a lot of chat. Oh, it's a shame that this wasn't on RTE. And funnily enough, at halftime, I was in my head, I'm glad this game wasn't televised because it was pretty poor the first half. Shells were very deep. There was a great atmosphere. Shells fans behind the goal with flares and all that. And the Bows fans in great voice. But the last half an hour, the second half in general, it's like as memorable a cup game as I can remember. And everything was there. You know, the fact that Conan Byrne missed a great chance was taken off. Replaced by Kilduff, who scored straight away. Absolute screamer from Farrell. James Cabia, who played very well, getting sent off for the technicality of kind of staying the wrong side of the pitch while his shin pads were off him. Then in the middle of that, a disgraceful tackle by Danny Mandrew that it did look bad on the night. Watching the replay, much, much worse. And that was probably the main kind of decision of the game. Rob Harvey obviously got that wrong. Then the sending off shells, like they just kind of got a little bit vulnerable. And Bowes, who had been pummeling them second half, eventually got the reward. I suppose two things. First of all, Danny Mandrew mentally needs to get his head sorted, like, because he can't be wound up and do tackles like that in a game. They probably would have lost. I thought in the game itself he was outstanding. He used the ball really well. When the option wasn't on, he was clever. He didn't, push the agenda, and eventually got his reward with a couple of goals. But the second thing, interesting to see what you think on this, lads. The fact that the FAI Cup has been, denigrated to the fact that there are no replays. You know, the Talca Park would have been absolutely heaving for a replay of this game on Tuesday night, which could have.
I don't know, John, though. We've complained about fixtures like mad here. So if we start throwing in more, I actually think, to be fair, that the concept of having no replays at the early rounds of the competition was sensible. Now it's a sense. It's like a sensible response to putting out a fire. You know, it's like that's well done. But I do think that throwing in replays, it's great for Bo Shells. But let's just say, I don't know, pick a game at the weekend. Even I don't know. Let's say Derry Wexford had finished nil all, and then Derry have to travel into Wexford on a Tuesday night, and then they're back to play a league game on Friday. We'd be going mad over it. So to be fair, I couldn't criticise them over that. That's a very isolated example.
But Johnny, you mentioned the Shells fans there, the big crowd in Dalymount,
like the absolutely full behind the goal. And now granted, there should be a big crowd of Shells fans for a game like that in a ground that they'll soon be actually living in, but they, you know, their home crowds have been excellent of late. And one thing you got to say about them, Johnny, they were so well coached on the night. They did everything properly. They were nil all, holding on, looked like they could hit them on the break. Bowes, looking back on it, like, they were very, very vulnerable for the two goals. They left huge gaps in the middle of the pitch, and Shells were able to exploit that. And I'd written my match report saying that, you know, former Gypsy Ian Morris had like masterminded this counter-attack and masterclass, and obviously 5 minutes later everything had changed. But I think going forward, considering Shells, like, they rested a few players, obviously Kilduff came off the bench, I think they'll be delighted. They look completely ready for the Premier Division if they can't get there.
That's the point it was going to come to, Johnny. I think they're getting ready for the Premier Division, and I think they'll just bring so much to the Premier Division. People will say, yeah, another Dublin team, but the crowds that Shells will generate, they've been out of the Premier Division for so long now, and I just think they're just going to bring loads of energy to it.
Yeah, well, I suppose, I mean, if it looks like very likely at the moment that they will replace UCD, so with all due respect to UCD, Shells will bring more from the crowds side of things. And maybe it is a case that the club has been, like, they were obviously back in recent memory, and it was only a cameo visit almost, but maybe there's that sort of renewed sense of purpose about the club again, and they might make more of an impact this time around, you know?
Definitely, Dan. And, you know, the thing about too many Dublin teams is crap, because the population is there to sustain it. Like, roughly a third of the population in the Republic live in Dublin, and that's consistent enough with the amount of teams. And Shells have, as you say, John, they've been gone away for so long. But just getting back to that point about the FAI Cup, I remember days when, like, cup replays, first round, second round replays, the place be absolutely hopping. That doesn't happen anymore. But I think if there's a bit of energy put into the competition, a proper drive by the sponsors, and with the you know, the finality of playing in the Aviva Stadium and getting a place in Europe if you win the cup, it has an awful lot going for it. And that game, like, I was absolutely buzzing coming out of that game last night. It really made me remember what the cup used to be. And then obviously you contrast it to Pats and Bray. There seemed to be nobody at that game. And obviously the early rounds have kind of, they've definitely gone down in terms of quality and interest. But that was fantastic Friday night.
Then Sunday, John, how did you feel leaving the ground on Sunday?
Yeah, like, that was at
probably
least
probably a bit steamed, I'd say. But aside from that,
he likes a pint of Guinness up in Home Farm. That's
he
where
does.
He
yeah, yeah.
I was very disappointed, John. I took your word from it the last time I was there for the Cork City Home Farm. As good a pint of Guinness as I've had in Dublin, but I didn't have a pint. I was actually working at the game on Sunday, so I scarpered afterwards and wanted to get the end of the guy in Croke Park. There weren't many in Croke Park. There certainly weren't many in Whitehall, maybe 100 fans. Galway United, first win since May, first relevant game in a long, long time. Sets up a home game against Cork City. We weren't great by any means, but at least we got the job done. But that point I did make on Twitter, it was just lovely to see fans with being able to watch the game, have a beer during the game, bringing a bit of money to the local home farm club and all that. And granted, there are only 100 people there, but I don't see why this can't be a regular thing at football games.
And the pitch is in great condition up there, Johnny. Yeah.
Unbelievable, John. It was. I used to live beside Whitehall in college, and I used to actually do laps of the little gap pitch beside it. But that was my kind of old haunt, and it was lovely to be back there. It's such a quaint little ground, lovely little stand, and, you know, granted, there wasn't an awful lot of quality, but good to see from a Galway United perspective. Conor Barry, who's had a really poor season by his standards with injury and so forth, got a couple of goals, and I honestly think Dan Cork City would be there for the taking this season. They nearly lost to Cabinteely, but we just don't look capable of doing it.
Okay, just finally, John, give us, before you go, what give us your European hot take then. Go on, what's your verdict? Did you see the Dundalk game last night? Did you hook it up on the van somehow, or what did you do? Did you take the van? Did you take the van overseas to hook into it on a VPN stream?
Yeah. You already allowed the window, Johnny, has you?
I did everything legally on this one, to be fair. But no, I watched the game. I can't say much about it, really. I was very disappointed. I thought.
Do you still think Bratislava are a bunch of cowboys, as you described them last week?
They're absolutely there for the taking.
Are they a bunch of cowboys?
They were a bunch of cowboys. Look at the freeze they were giving me. Chris Sheets fouled about six times. They never actually did enough to show that this team was very beatable. They only showed it kind of in patches in the game because they'd given away sloppy goals. I thought Dundalk were way too open in the first half. It was like as if they were gung-ho to get a goal when, like, I would have been just relax, stay at nil all. Like, every time they gave the ball away, they looked like they could concede. Granted, they really put an awful shift in. I thought they were excellent. Felt sorry for Hooban to miss the penalty. Not sure it would have made an awful lot of difference, but they were rattled at that stage. But I have to say, I don't know what you lads think, but I thought it was a fairly sort of anticlimactic end to the whole European.
Yeah, well, we're going to get on to it after you leave, John, because we have to let you go. We've got Stephen Rice coming in now. But what's on the agenda for the next couple of days then? Where else is on your... I see you went to Bail na Blá. You're sort of, you found your nationalism again after deciding that it was a dated concept. I met a certain Mr. Caban at the game last night who couldn't believe you were posting pictures of yourself at Michael Collins, the place of Michael Collins' death, and what this would have done for the country. When a couple of months back you were saying nationalism, the whole concept of nationalism is dead. Declan Rice, what's the point?
I think you're putting words into my mouth.
No. I'm not putting words into your mouth.
Man, Michael Collins would be one of my heroes in history, and it was mad being there because every couple of seconds people were just turning up in cars, so obviously it still resonates. But I went to see where he was born as well, and very beautiful part of the world. You could see why he fell in love with the country, but unfortunately this country doesn't have a team in the Europa League or Champions League group stage. But at least Linfield are still
there.
What
he would have wanted as well, I suppose.
Carrying the flag for the country. But enjoy the rest of the show, lads, anyway, sure, and I'll be back next week.
Enjoy, Johnny.
Cheers, Johnny.
Take care.
Stay between the ditches, John.
Thanks, John.
So we look forward to having Johnny back next week. Now, Stephen Rice has joined us, but before that, we're going to hear some audio from Vinnie Perth after Dundalk's defeat to Bratislava last night.
Yes, Europe has got a lot harder than it was. It was three rounds, it's now four. To be fair, we do have the champions route, which means losing a game gives you another opportunity, but it was three, now it's four, so it is more difficult to get there. But I want us to chase that. I want us as a club, to be fair to the owners of our club, they've backed us in chasing that. We want to be people to be chasing European football at the highest level, whether it's playoffs or group stages. So as I said to you, It's a difficult, like, I don't know what Riga's result today or this week, but, you know, Riga was meant to be an easy tie for us. You need a little bit of luck in the draw in Europe, you really do. And even to be fair to Slovan, they've got a tough draw now. So you see how difficult it is. So a bit of luck in the draw, and yes, it's definitely improved at the highest level of European football. There's no doubt about that. Absolutely has. I felt the preparation coming into this tie, we were ready for it. I think Irish sides over the years have always struggled against pace and power. I think them days are starting to drift. We're getting closer to where we should be in the physical mindset. I think now the next stage for us is to improve the mental mindset and compete at this level. And that's the challenge for us as coach and staff. And that's what we'll focus on in our club. I felt coming into the tie, the one thing we've done in the club is improved the club defensively, and that's almost been thrown as a criticism of the staff. We had a couple of lapses there in the first half that is very uncharacteristic of us, but I think our attack and play has to be better, and I think we have to be a bit more clinical at this level. So we should have scored away from home in this tie, for argument's sake, which would have changed tonight, so or certainly put in more positive. So we're up in a high level, and it's difficult, and you've got to be, you know, Irish clubs will have to go to the well to get results at this level for the next couple of years, but ultimately that's where we're disappointed in. I'm not going to make excuses, but the attacking side of our club, or the central part of our club, has struggled this year because of obvious difficulties we've had. And I thought in the last two games we had a much better balance about us in terms of the midfield, which helped us create more chances. So I think in both legs we've created enough chances, we just haven't been clinical enough.
Stephen Rice, you're very welcome. You found us. You've had a little bit of a tour around the offices of Air Sport here. Where did you end up exactly?
I ended up in the Satanta Sports Kitchen.
In the Satanta Sports, it's the Air Sports Kitchen now. Is the official title.
Don't worry, you won't find out in there. There's never any there.
Didn't even get a cup of tea out of
it. Yeah. So you've come to join us anyway. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. Busy away, busy. Obviously with Shamrock Rovers and with the FAI, so we're keeping well in general.
Yeah. So for people who aren't aware with what you're doing now, like, what are you up to at the moment? What's your responsibilities?
I'm a development officer with the Football Association and also assisting in the delivery of coach education there. And then with Shamrock Rovers, I'm the under-19 head coach and involved in between that. Then obviously I'm participating on the current pro licence, which is happening as well. So very, very busy, but enjoyable because it's football.
Mm. Lads, we'll talk a bit more about what Stephen's up to and a few general topics. But we are speaking today on Wednesday morning after Dundalk were knocked out of Europe last night, thus ending the Irish run in Europe this year. And we're speaking a small bit off air, Johnny, like you, and Stephen, you've both been involved in big European successes over the years, and like, I don't know how you assess this year in Europe for our clubs, because I would look at it and say maybe with the exception of Cork, all the teams went out to sides that on resources etc you would expect them to lose to. However, I think maybe particularly with Dundalk, I think as our champions, as our flagship team, there's maybe a small bit of disappointment in terms of how they performed. So, I don't know, 4-1 to Bratislava over two legs, 6 games in Europe, 3 draws, 3 losses. How do you think they'll reflect on their year, Johnny?
I think, generally the team's done well. Rovers done well in Europe, and the result last night, 4-1, probably sounds a lot, but it's a fact, it's 4-1.
Over the two legs.
It's a big result. I think with Vinny coming in as a new coach, things have to change a little bit. The experience that the Dundalk players would have had down through the years and the last few seasons would have stood to them. But they've new players in as well. But as we spoke off air, Dan, against when you get to the next level, to the next stage of Champions League or Europa League, you're just coming up against better quality. And as we said, everything has to be in sync.
It needs to be perfect.
100%.
Yeah.
And, you've got to have your plan A, your plan B. And, everything has to go for you. And even down to the side of the draw, and we can talk about that later. But everything has to go right. And you've got to get a tiny little bit of luck as well. But to get to the group stages of Champions League or Europa League is a huge, huge, huge task.
Yeah, because, I suppose Partizan Belgrade is like the standout memory from Rovers in terms of a two-leg execution of the tie, and you had difficult moments across those two legs, but Stephen, you also struck when you had the chance. You were clinical. You executed the plan.
Yeah, and look, it's obviously you need a bit of luck. Let's go. Yeah. That night in Partizan in Belgrade, we were very lucky in the first half of the game not to be over. Ryan Thompson pulled off some great saves, but as you said, I think when the chances came, we took them, and I think Slovan last night similar. Being clinical at that level is everything, because you might only get one or two chances in a game. And on that night in Belgrade, the two chances we had, we took, and Sully's goal wasn't even a chance, really. It was just something extraordinary.
And it turned the mood in the stadium. I was there. It was almost like that setback just Partizan all of a sudden were like, oh no, this wasn't in the plan. It was just after half time as well, and they were rattled.
It changed the mindset of everything, even us, because we were kind of thinking, hold on to this, keep at 1-0 and see can we stay in it. And once we scored, they were rattled, the crowd were rattled, everything. It changes the mindset. But I think taking the goal and scoring when the chances arise, which is not, as Johnny says, in Europe, it's not that often. So when them chances come, you have to be clinical. And if you don't, they will punish you.
But you also have to have that belief because, you're there on merit. You're there on the same level as this group coming in that you're playing. And you've got to instill that belief into your players that you're not there. You didn't get there through luck. You got there because you qualified and you're starting off at the same level as this team. And you've got to instill that belief. And when something happens like that, Stephen, that fantastic goal, you go, wow, we're as good as these. And that belief comes out in the team and it gives you lots of confidence. But again, the planning and all that has to come into place as well. But look, I think Rovers, as I said, were unlucky.
Rovers played with great confidence in all their 4 European games. Yeah. Maybe the first half in Cyprus, they had a tough time. But otherwise, they were, and even the first half in Norway, they finished all their games
They were unlucky not to get onto the next stage. But look, that's a learning curve for everyone at Rovers as well. Mm. You know, that's the next level. That's the standard. You don't get away with maybe a sloppy pass or giving them, trying to keep good positive possession around the pitch. Be patient. We spoke about being patient. And all that will stand the Rovers going forward over the next year or so. With Dundalk, yeah, I think this season will definitely help them. But you know, they're all gone now, with the exceptions. You know, Linfield are still in.
You've been to see Linfield?
I've seen them, and I watched them a couple of weeks back against Habe Faroes team. Obviously, went up to meet some of the lads from the Faroes that we would have worked with. But Linfield were lucky enough to get through the tie, but they got a little bit of luck, and they got luck in the draw as well. And I looked at them, and I said, looking at Linfield, I said, Dundalk would definitely beat Linfield. Rovers would definitely beat Linfield. But they've got through financially big money for Linfield to get through as well. And you know, people outside will look and go, well, the Northern teams got through, the Northern team got through, and the Southern teams didn't get through, and you know, from the League of Ireland, and they'll be looking at that saying, well, is the Northern League better or not?
I think that would be probably getting carried away, but it's possible people will look at it and wonder, you know. But the draw was kind enough to Linfield, it must be said. But at the same time, Linfield, if anyone listening from there, they would say, well, hang on, the team from Montenegro, they beat Knoxlov and Bratislava the Champions League. The Bratislava conceded 90th minute of both of those games, and their manager got sacked, and all of a sudden they seem to have got going again. But these are the funny old margins of it, you know.
But again, as Stephen said, you got to take your chances when you come along. But you're right, that team did knock Slovan Bratislava out, and then Slovan go and beat Dundalk 4-1. So people just go off facts as well. But look, I was up there, as I said, watched them, and obviously Pat Fenlon is doing his bit of work up there as well. Done a brilliant job to Windsor from what I've seen.
Bastian Herrie involved as well.
He played very well on the night. Now I have to say,
it's a quality addition for that type of competition.
But he'd lots of time, lovely on the ball, built everything through midfield for the Linfield. But for us down here, for the Dundalks, the Rovers, the Corks, whoever's in Europe, Pat's. But getting through, you know, the perception of your club, your team, the profile it gives to the club, the managers, the coaches, the players. But just from Stephen's, an up-and-coming young coach, it pitch your wits against, you know, you're not playing against UCD or Finn Harps or Pats every week. So you're it's not only for the players, but as a coach, you're pitting your wits against, you know, coaches around Europe as well. And it gives you that belief to say, yeah, I'm here as well on merit. But so it's good all around for not only for the players, supporters, but from the coaching side, the coach education side. And that's important for us here.
Stephen, I'm obviously conscious that you're involved with Shamrock Rovers here, but there's obviously a debate about the European performance and the importance of the European results at the moment. And like the Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers are going to be in Europe next year. They're probably going to be in Europe for the next couple of years, you would think, you know. And basically, the question, how important is it that they do well? Or I saw a bit of discussion this morning, you know, online and stuff. Is it more important that the whole league collectively rises? Or should we be sitting down after Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers results, or particularly Dundalk, who haven't maybe done as well as they would have wanted, and think, what does this say about the league? Or should we be focusing on the collective? You know, this is the... Like, a lot of people wouldn't care that Dundalk went out last night. Ultimately, other clubs would say, well, hang on, what is their success doing for us?
So are you saying so the financial gains by Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers or wherever else should filter, so that one should filter?
Well, that's a discussion point that's been raised, because what good is their success if the teams along the line aren't improving? And it's a sort of a chicken egg thing in a way, because they need higher opposition week to week.
But isn't that the
to
same,
be ready for European football
but
as
isn't
well.
But it's not the same everywhere. Like they talk about the Premiership, there's top six teams, the middle and the bottom. So I think if you go to Bratislava, if you go to Greece...
There's a lot of one-team leagues around
Europe. Yeah, and there's two or three. And I think it's the same all around. But unfortunately, like, you've got to give Dundalk so much credit for, you know, when Stephen Kenny came in there. They were starting from scratch. They built this up. They didn't get a load of money in from a benefactor or whatever. So, you know, you've got to give them lots of credit for that. You know, and if they're the ones that qualify, unfortunately, the money follows, Stan. You know, so why, we talk about Shells, why can't Shells do it over the next few years? Why can't Bows do it over the next few years? And again, you can only do what you can. You can only win your league. You can only qualify for Europe. And you can only go as far as you can go. Sometimes that's it. Maybe the bit of luck. If you can get into the qualifiers, that's fantastic. But what can you do, Dan? Do you say, well, we've done all the work here. We've earned, you know, 5 million over the European stage. So there's 10% that that go back to.
I think it's a hard argue for a commercial operation. Yeah. Like, it's not a charity, but no. I mean that's the view that would be taken.
Do you punt that? Do you say like Slovan Bratislava probably had players from all over Europe? You know, they could have players from whatever. I'm just saying,
€2 million striker in their team.
Yeah. So do we? Is that what we do
Slovenia.
Here? Yeah. Do you say, well, okay, we'll start investing our money into the players and bringing players in from outside of the country?
Why now, Dan? Is that question coming on as I'd ask? Why now? Mm. You know, why are we saying now at this point? Well, you know, when Shells were successful, Pats were successful, and your Rovers are now done that. Well, we should divvy the money out. Like, why is it?
I think it's probably because when you played towards the end of the time when you were playing. And when you were managing at Pats, unfortunately, we had a situation where the league winners was changing every couple of years because clubs were going through a boom and bust cycle. Like, I remember it was a talking point that one of the strengths of the league is that there's been X amount of different league winners in a decade, like 7 league winners or 6 in a decade. But that's because, unfortunately, Shells, Drogheda, Bowes, to varying degrees, had gone bust. You know, so now what we have now is Dundalk potentially going for a fifth. You would say they're probably going to win a fifth league title in 6 seasons. And Rovers have qualified, I think, for Europe probably the last 5 seasons. So there's actually probably a degree of stability about those clubs that maybe in those times wasn't there. And all of a sudden people don't see how they claw that gap back.
But what happens is, Dan, like, so if you have a player at Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk or whoever, and they're potentially going to play somewhere else, they'll go to England or they'll go somewhere else. So then Dundalk or Rovers, whoever it is at the time, just because they're the two teams we're talking about, they just pick up the other players that are in the league and they take the next best players coming through, whether they're established players or younger players coming through. And that's, unfortunately, that's just the business of football. That's the way it is. Now, you know, as I said, they lose the players. They'll go to England and they'll make money out of players going to England. So that's extra money coming in for them as well. So it's about winning, Dan. It's about winning your league and about qualifying for Europe. And that the money follows you. That's just the way the business is.
But I guess the question is, are the games that Dundalk and Rovers getting week to week, if they are dominant enough domestically, is it preparing them for Europe?
No, I don't think so. I think the games are not probably, you look at the European games and we would, as Shamrock, would dominate a lot of the games. Dundalk dominate a lot of the games. In Europe, it's totally different and the quality goes up, I think, 2 or 3 notches in Europe in terms of the tactically and technically, the players, their understanding, the coaches, it's a different level. So there is a balance in what you're saying. I understand the league needs to become stronger to challenge Rovers and Dundalk, absolutely. But I think there's an element of responsibility on the clubs to really try. Like, I think Johnny made a great point. When Stephen went into Dundalk, they were probably on their knees at their rock bottom. They didn't have a massive investment, but what they've done is they put a manager in place and Stephen then put a structure and start recruiting players that were already around the league that probably weren't considered the top players, got them together as a team, and now they've got to that success. Are they going to want to turn around, or ourselves, as you're qualifying for Europe for the last 4 or 5 years, go, oh, okay, well, we've got to this point now, let's you know, throw certain money here and here. I wouldn't totally agree with it, but I do see your point in that the league needs to be stronger. But I think that's got to come probably from the clubs themselves.
And I mean, listen, there's obviously a broader point about investment and the authorities and where we go. But do we think, I think Rovers, as we said, we've acknowledged, I think they did well in Europe this year. Do we think the Dundalk have actually played to their potential in Europe this year?
I think of what they have. I really do, Dan. I think they're where they're at. And that's the point I made earlier on. You'll go so far unless, as you said, everything just falls into place. You get that bit of luck and everything is perfect. I think they've got to where they're at. And if I was, you know, Vinny, they had a chance to get through, but I wouldn't be over disappointed of them, you know, what happened against Slovan. I think they learn from it, but they could have got through, but I think they're where they're at.
Yeah, they were. I don't know if you saw the game last night.
No, Steve, I didn't.
No. They were. I mean, they were surprisingly open at points in the first half. I wonder, is this one of these things that teams expose you in a way that that you wouldn't be exposed domestically? Like, we say they looked open because Slovan picked the first goal was a classic counter with like a, you know, really high quality attack and play. The second goal was just a mistake. It was a mix up at the back. It happens. But is it a case that you're just tested in a way that you're not? Like, the things happen that half a second quicker.
Is the mistake, as you say,
or did they go too cavalier?
Yeah, but
this is a debate about
last
night.
If they're not used to playing that way, Dan, as well. But is the mistake? You know, sometimes you say it was just a mistake. But does that mistake come from being forced, being put under pressure? You know, the other team just being at an extra level, pressurising the team. You know, closing teams down. So the detail of small of things where you go, was just a mistake. Sometimes the detail of that is beyond our, you know, the build up to what happened. But look, you know, if that's the way they played last night, that was the plan. That was the way they played.
But I think Dundalk attacking every Friday in the League of Ireland in terms of their balance and attack and how they attack is going to be. It's a different level. You're attacking against a lower Premier Division side or even a mid Premier, and you lose possession in their final third. More often than not, they'll you probably won't get killed. You'll in terms of your balancing, like, you'll probably get away with it. But at that level, as you said, they looked open. Were they open, or is that how Dundalk play?
And yeah.
But the opposition exposed them more than what. Probably teams.
But they had the full backs pressed on, and you know they had to go for it. I don't think it was exposed. I mean, they're playing Finn Harps at home on Friday. If they give the ball away in their own half on Friday, it's very unlikely three passes later they're going to be picking the ball out of the net. You know, with a Brazilian or a guy nodding in across from a €2 million striker for Slovenia. But I think they probably have higher standards themselves. I think they know themselves too that they can probably operate at a tighter level than what they did. I mean, like, any team that concedes a goal would always say it's preventable. You know,
yeah, of course. You never concede a good goal. You never turn around and go, well, you know, we've conceded a good goal. There's always things you can improve on, and there's a reason why you've conceded it. But I think when we're talking about Dundalk and how they've gone, I think to note what you've said about the number of internationals that the likes of last night brought, you know, from that country, you look at someone like Rosenberg as well, those type. We're working, and Dundalk are working, Shamrock are predominantly with Irish players.
100% almost,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's something probably we have to look at as well. Like, obviously with the underage national leagues are giving our young players a chance and we're bringing more players through. But is to go to that very next level and consistently qualify. I think somebody's got to crack it and qualify for the Europa League group stages twice in a row. You know, to really crack it and to stay there financially, but allowing you probably to bring in
How hard is that, Johnny? As a manager, how hard is that to? Because I'm sure you, during your time, you would have probably had, particularly at Pats, you would have players from outside probably offered to you, or you know, they'd come across your radar. The Dock have tried it, like with Adarjan last year, he was quite good. The Marco Tagbajami probably wasn't, and yet he'd played at a good level, but he just maybe just wasn't up to it. Rovers have tried it with some players. I mean, it depends, can be a mixed bag.
It depends on the, like, you get offered players all the time when you know when you're up there and you're in Europe, you know, people would know that, but. You need to bring the players into fit into what you're doing, Dan. You don't just say, well, we're taking a player in from Belgium because he's from Belgium. Mm. We need to bring someone in that fits into what way we're trying to play. They fit into the system of play. And sometimes you look and say, well, this fella's been there. He's been around 6 or 7 countries and you're going, there's a reason for it. Maybe the young player, you might get a young player on loan. That type of system might work where you're not bringing them in and paying the big money. But, you know, there has to be a way of doing it. And I think the point about bringing players from outside, you know, the PFA would then be saying, oh, sure, we're losing player fellas and not getting... That's business.
Brian Kerr said last week that the league is very beige at the moment. Mm. That was his description. On the basis of that, it's very sort of...
There's a few beiges now.
He didn't go into a particular shade. But you know, his point is it's a bit samey, I guess, to a degree. That it needs that freshness.
Well, the likes of Eary coming in down to Limerick there, and he's up to Linfield now. He's a bit of spark. I mean, nice player and all. Look, it's up to the clubs. It's down to them as a business. You know, as Stephen said, clubs have got to do things themselves with help from the association. And I think with Europe, I think the association should always try and help the clubs. And I know calling off games and all that stuff, but you know, we're talking about fixture congestion, and you know, we know it's probably going to get in, but maybe get them clubs to play early on in the season against one another and it frees up. But that's another day's work. But, you know, helping them along the way, giving them whatever assistance they need, saying, look, here's Abbottstown, use all their video analysis stuff that you need, whatever technical stuff that you want. Give them as much chance to qualify as possible. And I think that can be a help as well. I know that's another aspect to it, but look, it's down to the clubs. It's down to the clubs than to them. Themselves as an enterprise, as a business, to try and move on, and is bringing players into the outside, is it bringing young players through from the underage structures? I don't know. Do we always talk about, let's look at Scandinavia and stuff like that. Maybe we should look out elsewhere and see how other countries deal with that. You know, but we need to have our own identity. We don't have the perception of Ireland is it's not a professional league, Dan. And unfortunately, that's the perception of Ireland until someone qualifies, Rovers, Dundalk qualify. But the point that Stephen has made is very important, that we consistently can do that. And that's how we do it, when we do it, and with what methods or ways that we do it. It's a hard one to call.
I think you have to be realistic as well. Like, what I'm not saying now, every club in the League of Ireland should look at for. The realism is it's Dundalk and Rovers at the moment who could potentially do it. But qualifying for Europe, as Johnny said, the perception of the league externally from top players will be maybe it's not a full-time or professional league. It's only probably Dundalk or Rovers that could add that one or two, like the lads at Dundalk last year that you spoke about, that really could come in and add that little bit of quality. And you're saying, what can take you to the next level? Yeah. What could have took you that 1% last night for Dundalk or even for us? And is it that little, that player externally that you might bring in? You know, that's
it's a gamble though as well, isn't it?
Because it's a
generally it's going to be an expensive gamble. You have to relocate. They're probably not going to come for a 1 year contract in some cases because our contracts can be a bit with the summer season. There's obviously, if you're looking for someone who is England, there's an alternative. Like, there's a few complications with that.
Which is why there's only probably Dundalk and Rovers that can do that right now at this moment in time. And that's, as I said, and why it has to be, it's so key that European qualification is consistent, but I suppose the recruitment and the scouting network has to be right to make sure that this player is right. But he could also be the one. He could be that one too.
And he could be the one that brings on the next one. And the next one, because you're right, Dan, about them. You start with budgets and you go, this is the budget, this is what we need to work with. Yet we'll get to Europe, you work out with your budget there. So now you've added. So, you know, you're building a team, you build a team, and then you build a good team, then you build a very good team. And the same with players. You get good players in, then you're getting really good players, then you're getting excellent players, and then you go to the next level. So how many international players have you got in your team? Whether they're under 21 international, under 19 international players, you know, so you're looking for the elitism all the time to bring into your team, and you know, whether they're home based and or whether they're players from outside. And the recruitment's important, you know, and there's lots of agents and all that stuff. So if you can get in with someone that might believe in what you're trying to do with your club, an agent, he might be able to put a couple of players in your direction. They might be obviously top quality, but they might be the players on the way up. And two or three of them players coming into your group and into what you're trying to do and into your club, it can definitely, you know, lift. And that might be the consistency of it.
Because Europe is the market, and when we play them, we always look at them and you go and see them, and what are they doing, and what you look at the squad, the first thing that always comes up is budgets, isn't it? Yeah. Well, their budget is X and their budget is Y, and we're always way behind. So we are more than likely always punching above our weight. But what are they doing? As a coach, what are they doing there? Why are they having success?
It's just this, obviously the problem is it's a massive gamble for an Irish club still to push out their budget even more when they are ultimately reliant on European results as their biggest driver of revenue. They're not talking about domestic prize money or TV deals or stuff like that. So ultimately, like, you can get a really bad draw and be really unlucky and be gone. Even if you've improved,
but if you've
you could be 10% better, but then all of a sudden, you end for example, the team from Luxembourg that got in last year. Keep going on about them. They were like the Dundalk of last year. They got in, but this year again, the draw has been so unbelievably kind to them. They played a team from Estonia last night who Celtic hammered, and now they play a team from Georgia or Albania to get back into the group stages. They didn't have to think about a Pauk or an Ajax or even a Carabag who ended up losing the Champions League last night. So there are variables. Like Rovers, say Dundalk, you push out your budget. You go, let's bring in these two or three elite players, but then you just end up drawing a team you can't beat, and all of a sudden you're left with this outlay and no return.
Well, it's the balance.
But that's why consistency and qualification, Dan, and it wouldn't be...
You have to keep coming back.
Well, I think, you know, when Dundalk cracked it in 2016 or when we were in 2011, I think in between that, you know, in between those two and trying to really go for it the second year where you know you've got a bit of financial clout behind you where you've earned good money in it. But that might be the time. It's not just a case of, right, let's... Because we've been born in the league, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know, so many clubs now about just... going for the golden egg and trying to get it.
What happens then as well, Dan, and it gets very complicated, whether it's a bit of luck, but you bring a player in and he then becomes on a big salary, and then you have a huge differential between...
100%. You know, that's the challenge, yeah.
And, you know, so you've got to nearly say every year, like, this is the budget. The budget is we get through the fourth round. That's all we're going to get. Now, hopefully, you're trying to get through the... But you build it up over a few years, Dan, and it's... you've got to do it slowly. You can't, as you said, overextend and reach out there and then you don't qualify or you're knocked out in the first round and then you're left with three or four players that are on big, big salaries. If they're on them, you've got to be able to pay the players. And if you budget right and you get a bit of luck, and you get a bit of luck in the draw as well. So it's tough, good management.
I think the point though, Dan, you're looking, what you're saying is, are we disappointed? And you look at Slovan and you look at even SK Brann, who we played at Rovers recently. They've all got players from all around Europe. They've all got more internationals. Hmm. So we also need to be realistic about where we are in terms of, you look across air squads and you know, getting, as I said, element of disappointment last week. That's probably a sign of how far we've come, that we're saying we're not getting to the playoff round and we're disappointed.
There's none of this stuff like about brave, valiant. I don't think that language that probably would have been there for 20 years ago. It's like they gave it their all, but they got tired.
There. That's the point.
Like that's
we're
changing.
There on the same level. Yeah. We're there on merit. Yeah. Absolutely there on merit. Just the last point, and I think this is important because, you know, with the younger players coming through, and Stephen's work with younger players, I think we're giving our younger players overall from this, you know, I know the 13th league is, I think it's very young, but we're now giving them nearly this professional pathway from, you know, from maybe 15, 14, 15 going forward now. And I think that benefit will definitely benefit the league maybe in 5 or 6 or 7 years' time. Because, you know, you talk about Norway, Sweden, these lads are not professional clubs from a young age. And I'm not saying I'm involved with Bever, I'm not saying that these players have not been coached or qualified, you know, come through the system. Lots of players have come through and it has worked. But they're in a system, they're mentally in a professional system from a 14 or 15 age group. And I think down the road that should help us a little bit.
Well, Stephen, as someone who's working as the under-19 manager at Shamrock Rovers now, so you're working at that league, how would you describe the level at that league and how big a jump is it from that to Premier Division level for players now?
The jump is huge. The jump is very big. You know, I said we've had Thomas Alua make his debut in Europe actually a couple of weeks ago. But I suppose it's that gap between 19s and 17, 18 year olds going in then with first team. And I think even if they were 20, there's still a massive gap to that realism of first team football and the realism of its results based, you know, the intensity of training. It is a big gap. And obviously, I know it's a much talked about subject about missing. I think when I come back, I think we did 21s league where you could play three players down when I come back from England initially. In terms of the standard of the league, I suppose it's mixed in standard of the underage leagues. It's mixed because you've got areas who maybe aren't overloaded with players and don't have a massive selection of players, and they're challenging against maybe the players playing GAA and soccer at the same time. And then in Dublin, then you've got clubs who are, you're picking from, I suppose, most of the DDSL players or what would have been, and then I suppose the players in Dublin are spread out around those clubs. From our end, what we're trying to do is get to a point where we don't need to recruit, where they're in our club from 7 and 8, and they're, as Johnny says, they're training 4 times a week and they're in that professional mindset. So, you know, the next year or two at 13s, 15s, we don't really want to have to recruit anymore. And I think that's the way, why the 13s probably went so young, that they're in your club from a very young age. They're training in your mindset, your methods, your ways. They understand the club and how it operates and what it means to be part of the club. So when they come through at 16, 17, 18, they want to be there. You're not just cherry picking players, I suppose.
It's not a shock to them either, Dan, when, you know, if they're in a professional environment, you know, and looking across Europe down through the years, you know, you've lads 17s playing 19s, you've got 19 year olds playing first teams around Europe. And that, excuse me, that should be the plan here, that if we get the players to that elite level, not all 19 year olds playing in the Premier League, but in our Premier League, but we should be introducing them and getting them in, and it might take a little bit of time for them to develop, but that it's not a shock to them that they're not just coming out of a DDSL 17s team or whatever. But they have that professional mindset that they are professional players, and it's not such a big goal for the big jump for them. But they all won't come true. The problem is there's going to be the late developers as well, Stephen, that come along.
But a lot of them will be spread to other clubs around the league as well. I mean, and it's hard for you to talk about your current group, but it's possible that only 1, 2, 3 end up playing for Rovers. But if the rest of them have careers elsewhere in the league, you've sort of done your job to a degree. Although it's, I mean, and that's the percentages at top clubs in every league.
It's
funny you
mentioned that, Dan, and I'll be brief. And I was over in Liverpool recently and was sitting down talking a cup of tea with the coaches over there, the youth coaches. And he was saying,
Belva, was it?
Yeah, with Belva there. And he was saying he'd let a lad go, say he'd let Stephen Wright go. He's a right-sided defender, right-sided wing-back, whatever. And he'd let him go at Liverpool. And because his pathway, not even to the first team, his pathway to the 23s was blocked because there's too many of that type of player. So you're right in what you're saying then, Dan. But they were saying they'll get him located somewhere else. You know, but he couldn't get through to Liverpool. And he kept the left side of the fella on because they hadn't as many players. So, you know.
It's funny. You see like someone like Dean Williams scoring the weekend. You got Aaron Dobbs scoring for Longford last night. I mean, it's you know, at least if we have the top clubs with a reasonable underage system, that those lads will go elsewhere. Maybe if it's not necessarily going to happen for them, but it might in one of those.
They should be playing. The Rovers, the Rovers young lads should be off playing with Longford and at Loan, playing in the fourth division, because it absolutely will stand to them.
Are you enjoying it, Stephen?
I love it. Yeah, it's great. It's different to, I suppose, working with a fourth team in that you're developing, and I've been in development now for probably 6-7 years and working with players from 14s now up to, all the way up to 19s now I'm at, like, you know, and it's moving through the ages, as Johnny will know. It's very different. Each age group is very different, but it's just great, I suppose, learning from me that, you know, each year you're making mistakes, and at an underage level you can make mistakes as a coach, and you know, it's probably the knock-on effect of that isn't as much, but you can also find your own way, your own playing style and how you do it and how to coach and how to manage as well, so that if you tend to move on at some point, then you have that experience behind you.
When are you moving on?
Is that the next step, though, to manage yourself at some stage at a senior level? Is that where you see your own pathway, I guess?
Yeah, well, I'm on the pro license at the moment, and I, you know, I wouldn't be taking up the pro license if that wasn't the path that I wanted to go. As Johnny's done it himself, it's quite intense. There's a lot in it, but it is, management is something. I said, not right now. I'm learning lots now on what I'm doing. Whether it be a senior job comes up or an international, underage international job, certainly something that you will be looking
at. Who's on your course, the pro license course?
You've Robbie's on it, obviously Robbie Keane, and Keith Andrews is on it, Damien Duff is on it, Dave Rogers is on it, keeping us all on our toes. Roggie,
I saw he was doing commentary last night at the game.
Yeah, and then you've
scored a goal for Shells once, I believe. Did he against Hydrock Split?
No, the volley. Yeah, you've lots of good lads. So you've
good stories, I guess. Though, do you? Share a bit of information or chats or?
Well, there's a great variant. Paddy McCarthy's there. He's from Palace 18s, and we've lads from all walks of life. Jim Brennan in Canada. You know, there's lots of lads, and there's lots of.
But that's where you learn the dynamic. The dynamic of the group is, you know, you go on the courses and there's presentations done, but the dynamic of the group is where you sit down like this way, we're talking, that, you know, it might not be in the classroom or on the, but it's afterwards when you're sitting down having a cup of tea or having lunch and you're talking and you're sharing ideas. Yeah, and I think that dynamic definitely brings the learning for the coaches. I think that's a great way of learning. But the way Stephen is doing it as well, like, you're working with young players now as well, so if you do go and work at a senior level, you'll also have to work with younger players, and you'll have that ability to be able to work with younger and senior players.
But I think the way the league is going now with the underage national league and whatever you say about it, it's giving clubs a structure. It's giving clubs more of a structure, and you'll see, I suppose, more players coming through. The league is going to become even younger, I think, because of the nature of the financial side of it, that clubs aren't in a position to pay, you know, what particularly outside maybe the top 2 or 3 clubs. So you talk about Dean Williams, and you talk about, you know, the likes of Aaron Dobbs and Sean Boyd, all these younger players now. The profile of the league now, compared to probably when you were managing that patch, Johnny, is a lot less now. You know, it's probably 19, 20, 21, 22. Lads are in college. Lads are coming out of the underage national league. And I think that's going to be key going forward, because I think that will bring the standard overall of the league up, and the players are in nearly a full-time mindset before they even go full-time.
But the problem then, as I said, there's a flip side to that, is you bring 3 or 4 fellas through, boom, 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 they're gone to Leeds, Aberdeen, or Chelsea, or Man City, or whatever. That happens. And
but that's part of the model, though. But that's also part of the financial model at Rovers as well, to be fair. I mean, part of the model, you know.
Yeah, we've had James Forlong go recently from ourselves to Brighton, which Trevor Clark's gone. You know, it's, as you said, you look again, it is, I suppose, a victim of your own success in some senses, but there is the financial element that assists the club and goes back into the academy or to the first team to help get closer to the European success or to league title success. So it is that cycle, Johnny.
And it might evolve. It might eventually evolve into where we're the Rosenberg. We've a Rosenberg here in Ireland.
But Stephen, you were always clear about going into football after you finished playing. Were you always sure that this was the route that you wanted to go?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, no. It was always coaching and management. I think it was in me as a player. It was that, I suppose, say that type of player. But it was always probably asking questions about the game and looking into it, and always loved being in training and loved the kind of the tactical element of the game and trying to understand that. And I suppose playing in Europe at the level actually really opened my eyes, because as Johnny says, when you go to that level and it's more about here than your feet, it's more about in your head than your feet. But definitely from a very young age, even before probably 10 in the street league, sometimes I wouldn't play. I'd sit on the wall on the side of the pitch with the lads, you know what I mean? So that was probably straight away an insult.
You're showing signs of a long term illness.
I'd a cadet caller beside me.
That should be diagnosed.
He's a student of the game.
So you know, you're in it for the long haul then, put it like that.
I suppose, yeah, I love the game. I love coaching. Were you in it for the long haul,
it'll
Johnny?
End up
I'll
like
tell
me,
you
know,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the nature
six
of
holidays
the,
a year, though.
Now, Daniel, only now.
He's getting a new TV show, aren't you? were you in it for the long haul, Dan? is the nature of football. I'll certainly be, you know, looking to move forward and develop as a coach and improve and go to the highest level that I possibly can.
But you have passion, Stephen. That's vital. You have the passion for you. You speak about this is what you want to do. Your passion is there. And once you have that passion or attitude towards it, you're halfway there.
Lads, just before we let you go, we're just going to look at the fixtures this week. On Friday, we've got Bowes UCD, bit of a revenge for the recent scrap at Belfield. Might be on the cards there from the Bowes perspective. We've got Derry City, Shamrock Rovers, St Pat's, Sligo Rovers, Waterford, Cork City, and Dundalk, Finn Harps, live on Air Sport. All those games again on Friday. First Division, we've got Bray Wanderers against Cove, Cabinteely, Galway, Drogheda, Wexford, Limerick, Athlone, and then on Saturday we've got Longford Town and Shells. Does anything grab you from this weekend's fixtures?
Bowes need to start picking up a few points, because Pats and Derry are sneaking up looking for that European spot. So for me, Bowes need to get back on track. Forget about all the hype about Bowes and back to basics and get a few wins under their belt.
I suppose, Stephen, the Rovers' mindset now, 26 games played, 10 to go up in Derry, just try and win every game and see what happens. I guess that's really all they can do. It's all they can look after.
Yeah, you can just look after the performance. And I think if the team performs obviously the way they have been of late, you can go, but you have to just win the games now. It's out of our hands, I suppose, in a lot of senses. You've just got to win the games and try to put Dundalk under as much pressure that if they slip, that you're right on the coattails, you know.
I suppose from a Shamrock Rovers point of view, that you're saying it's a pity Dundalk got knocked out, because you'd nearly want them to stay in Europe as well. The congestion,
it's a strange psychology.
And then
it,
you just pick up points, you just get on that momentum and you pick up your points. But look, Rovers have closed the gap. There's no doubt about it. They've closed the gap. They've been there consistently over the last few years. And they're closing that gap points-wise. Because over the last few years, it was 18, 20, 22. Yeah. Now we're closing it right down. So, you know, will they catch Dundalk? I don't think so. But, you know, go and try and win every game that you can. And it's definitely, that gulf is definitely closing.
Yeah, and I suppose they're looking to next year already. When I spoke to Graham Burke last Friday after the Finn Harps game, and looking ahead to, I mean, he's on loan until next August, so he's there next season. And when I spoke to Graham, he spoke very well about his reasons for coming home and why he's happy to be back. And I mean, even just to be able to bring in a player of that quality. Now, they have to figure out how to play him and how to accommodate him, which is going to be, it's a pretty good problem to have. But I mean, that's a serious boost. It must be for people around the club, Stephen, to have sort of Graham coming back in.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you look at the attacking options now within the squad. It's an exciting team. And for any, you know, as a manager, you want the best players and the best attacking players. And because of the style of football that we try to play, they all, as you said, it's getting them in. And I'm sure Stephen has a plan for that and how he gets Graham in. But he's an international. Obviously, he had a fantastic time here when he was here the previous 12 months ago before he moved, he's a real fans favourite. And anytime you bring that type of player back who scores goals, you know, fans love him.
But there's competition all around the pitch now, Stephen, as well. That makes your, I don't mean that it's your job easier as a manager, but the levels of training are up. You know, there's not, you know, fellas just say, I'll be in, I'll be expecting to play. Once there's competition around the team, it just lifts the training and it lifts everyone around the place.
And we've got, obviously, Neil to come back, Neil Frugis to come back into that as well, throw him into the mix, obviously.
Serious
in terms
talent.
Of that,
yeah, he's had a few. I spoke to him briefly after the game on Friday. It's just the hamstring just seems to be a small bit more complicated. So it's just he's lost a small bit of time, but hopefully he'll be back soon. But, right, lads, I'm going to let you go. Before we go, tip for the cup. Now, you see, the Shamrock Rovers hat on. Do you not want to take the pressure away from Rovers? All this cup pressure on
them.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about the cup after that Sligo penalties.
Oh, no, yeah, you're a survivor of that.
A survivor, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, look, it's
you fancy Rovers, don't you?
I'm not going to say anything, no, because I don't want to jinx it. No, look, we'll. I'm not even going to comment on it because I don't want to jinx it.
I understand. There's an experience in that answer. Johnny Mack, you don't have any stake in the game here that prevents you from an answer.
No, I have. I'm looking. I think Pats will get through with UCD. I think Bowes will get through. I think you're looking at semi finals maybe down the road. Dundalk have a tricky one up in there.
I think that's a really,
really
tricky one.
Game up there. If they get through that, I'm looking like them four teams, say Dundalk, Bowes, Pats and Rovers, the four semi-finalists. And out of that then, you'd be looking at Dundalk and Rovers in the semi-final.
Just give us one. Just give us a selection.
I hope someone wins. I'd like Rovers to win.
I hope someone wins it as well, John.
I really think someone has to. I was disappointed for Bowes last year. Mm. You know, not getting to the final. I thought they would have brought a lot to the final. Look, Pats might have a bit of a run, Bowes, but I think Rovers or Dundalk, one of them will definitely do it.
I think certainly breaking the Dundalk Cork thing will be huge for any clubs that make that cup final. And I think everybody's probably ready to see a different final now.
Yeah, well, if it's Dundalk Rovers, at least Bowes know that fourth place is enough for Europe. Then you see that's the other thing.
Equations
you know?
Come into play.
Yeah.
But I
think the cup this year though has got a chance of being. I think it's going to grow in profile because okay, Rovers aren't giving up in the league, but for the teams like Derry, Bowes, Pats, it's another route to Europe, and it's also. I think there's a viable opportunity there that maybe the teams at the top, like, they're not unbeatable as such, you know. So I think the cup might just build.
Well, if Derry, if they get through that game against Dundalk, yeah, but it'd be difficult. But they'd be my four teams, semi-finalists. I'd like to see, you know, the likes of Bowes or Pats or Rovers maybe, but I was disappointed with Bowes, as I said. Rovers... Yeah, I think Rovers could do it this year.
Okay, there we go. All right, listen, lads, it's great having you in. Stephen, thanks for joining us. Johnny Mack, I know you've got to run off, and we'll have Johnny, I assume, back from his Discover Ireland trip next week. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you soon. But there are